Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, the region's only locally produced public affairs program. Every Saturday at this time, Bedford County Speaks introduces community leaders, interesting topics, and people making a difference in Bedford County. Bedford County Speaks is presented exclusively by News Talk 1310 WBFD. Now, here's your host, Lloyd Broach.
Thank you, Matt DeFazio, and good morning to you. Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, the weekly public affairs program of News Talk 1310 WBFD. Today's program is presented as a public service by Thomas Chevrolet, right here on Route 220 in Bedford. That's Thomas, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years. I'll return in a moment with today's guest, Senator Wayne Langerholtz, when Bedford County Speaks continues.
Some time back, they did a survey and they found that lots of people who live within a few miles of the Liberty Bell or the Statue of Liberty never visited either place. That happens around here, too. Just after the start of the French and Indian War, Bedford County became the gateway to the West with the opening of the Forbes Road, which we now call Route 30. In 1794, President George Washington had to come here to quell the Whiskey Rebellion. By 1913, the first transcontinental road for motor cars, the Lincoln Highway, was dedicated here, and the legendary Bedford Springs Resort still welcomes people from all over the world. With this kind of legacy, why keep it a secret? Spread the word about Bedford County, the history, the charm, and the regal Alleghenies. Bedford County, America's open door to the West.
We don't get to talk to too many people who are in the Pennsylvania Senate because we don't have that many Pennsylvania senators within direct contact with us. Actually, we only have one right here in the district of Bedford County. I was just looking at Senator Langerholtz's map, and I see that you have all the county. There's no missing pieces, right? You have the whole
That's correct, all of Bedford County.
I know you have pieces of Clearfield, but you have the whole of Bedford County. So this is good. You are a senator. I want to remind everyone that Senator Langerholtz has appeared before us before, and he's a lifelong resident of Cambria County. Wayne Langerholtz Jr. was elected to the Pennsylvania Senate on November 2016. In the 2017-2018 session, he serves as the vice chairman of the Senate Transportation Committee, as well as a member of the Appropriation, Judiciary, Game and Fisheries, Local Government, Aging, and Youth Committees. You're a busy guy. Well, let me ask you first, we haven't really spoken, at least not on this program, since you've been elected. So what's it like going from working in Johnstown and Cambria County, all of a sudden you're in Harrisburg and you're a senator? What's it been like?
First, let me say thank you for having me back. It's always a pleasure to chat with you. It seems like ages ago that we talked. Yeah. It really wasn't that long ago.
Two years. Yeah.
It's been good. It's been a whirlwind. The best analogy that anyone's given me was it's like taking a sip of water from a fire hydrant. And that rings very true. Yeah. There's a lot going on. Schedules are fluid. And there's just a lot of information to assemble. And I'm enjoying it and enjoying representing the residents of the 35th District.
Well, I think that a lot of folks don't really understand, probably including me, exactly what a senator's role is. I mean, we kind of know our state reps because they're here and there's lots of them and their districts are smaller and maybe they're a little closer to the ground. Whereas the Senate, we know that you're the other body in Harrisburg, but I wonder if you could go and give me a little tutorial what the Senate body does for us.
Sure. I'm one of 50 state senators across the region, and it goes by population. We represent a little over, I think it's 252,000 individuals. So you can see as you get across the state that what you're representing based on population can sometimes be a larger, significantly larger land mass. We have three counties, almost all three counties, Bedford, Cambria, Clearfield County, and there are some senators from the eastern part of the state of Philadelphia who have like four or five blocks.
Right.
I mean, just because the population density is so big. So my job, first and foremost, is to fight for the residents of the 35th District and make sure that we have the proper seat at the table and make sure that our voices are being heard across all issues statewide, and that goes to enacting legislation to address concerns that we have here, as well as making sure that funding levels remain appropriate and that, you know, first and foremost, that taxes stay low.
Well, I looked at the website about you and senators in general, and I've noticed you guys, you meaning you senators, have some very specific things that you do, which is kind of interesting. And the other thing I wanted to mention to you is that in addition to the services that the government provides, I'm a little concerned that most citizens today look at Harrisburg and Washington to a great degree as the place to go and get free stuff. And would you say that that's most of what the business is transacted, say, in this local office in Bedford? People trying to find out what's available, quote, to them?
I would liken it to we assist individuals in helping them obtain services that they may need help with.
Yeah.
And anything that we can do, we have district offices here in Bedford. We kept the office the same as my predecessor, Cambria County, as well as Clearfield County, and then my capital office. And one of the goals that I have is to be visible and accessible, and so that residents know that they can come to this office anytime with any concerns, and we will do our best to help them.
So in your legislative roles, if a bill comes up and it's introduced either in the Senate or in the State House, what is the process of getting this thing signed by the governor? Is it you guys first or the State House first, or how does it go?
It depends where it originates from.
I see.
If it originates in the Senate, if it's a Senate bill, typically what will happen is there'll be emails that will go out as far as a certain senator may be looking for co-sponsors for legislation. So, you know, for instance, we have a co-sponsorship memo out dealing with the mandatory minimum sentences to try to bring those back. So I would circulate an email with a memorandum saying, you know, we're looking for co-sponsors to bring mandatory minimum sentences back. And then anyone that is interested would sign on to that, and then it goes into the appropriate committee.
And you're referring to a bill that you're talking about right now, mandatory minimums for serious drug offenses. Is that the one?
That's correct.
Allows to target high-level dealers who are profiting from poisoning our loved ones. The second one, we create a second program which allowed counties to better direct addicts to treatment that actually cures their addiction than just treat them.
Correct.
Yeah.
It would be state law.
So whatever you do in the Senate affects everyone in Pennsylvania.
Correct.
Not just this district. So that does make you a little broader in scope, I suppose. That's
correct.
How that works? Okay. Our guest is Senator Wayne Langerholtz, and we're kind of pummeling with maybe civics questions, but, you know, I've always wanted to ask someone like you this kind of stuff. We've talked to other members of the Senate in over the years, and I've never asked them any of these questions. That got off easy, so I thought maybe I'd ask a new guy.
Even if I would just expand on that. So say that the bill comes out of committee. If it gets enough votes to come out of the committee,
right,
then it will go to the floor of the Senate, where then all 50 senators would vote on it. And, of course, at any point, even in committee as well as on the floor of the Senate, anyone can offer amendments. So you have this bill that can be – you know, there can be four or five amendments changing different things, changing the whole thing. And then there's votes on the amendments and then ultimately votes on the bill. And if the bill passes, then it's sent over to the House. And then the House has the same option. You know, they can have anybody introduce amendments. They can pass it as is and send it back. Then it would go straight to the governor. But if they would change anything on that bill, amend it, then it comes back to us. And then we have to look at that amendment, or we can amend it. And it can go back and forth, like a table tennis table.
Now, do you guys get to work directly with the governor in trying to get some of these things through? I mean, we see in the news that sometimes the governor will stand up and say, well, we didn't like what the House sent us or what the Senate sent us, so we're going to veto it or whatever. I mean, do you ever talk to these guys, I guess, directly before they hit the media and kind of let their views be known?
I mean, there's a constant talks or negotiation between Senate leadership, House leadership, and the governor's office.
Right.
I can speak to one of the bills that I introduced, Senate Bill 5, my first bill dealing with gun preemption. And when I introduced that in committee, there were some Democratic senators who, I don't know if they were trying to waylay the bill being introduced, but had said, the governor called me this morning and he said he's going to veto this bill. I said, okay, well, that's fine. We're going to still proceed with the numbers. Because one thing that we've been able to gather since the last cycle is a veto-proof majority. We have 34 Republican senators in the Senate. So that, you know, is good.
Is there an override in the Pennsylvania Constitution?
Yes.
Where you can go in and override a veto? Oh,
yeah,
there is.
That's
34?
The number 34.
Yep. That's the magic number.
Correct.
But you need all 34.
Right.
Yeah. Has this happened yet?
Not yet.
Okay. It could, though.
It may with my first bill.
Well, then I'll be back to talk to you about that. That'll be interesting. Let me kind of turn a little bit here to something. It's something been very much in the national news, illegal immigration to be specific, and sanctuary cities. we only have two major cities in the whole state, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. And I don't know if they're sanctuary cities or not. Are they?
Philadelphia. Yes. Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh is not.
I'm not sure.
I guess what I'm getting at, can the Pennsylvania Senate do something about this one way or the other? Is this just all in the governor, or is it on the cities themselves, or how does it work?
We actually passed a bill maybe 2 weeks into my term, 2 or 3 weeks into my term, dealing with sanctuary cities. It was sponsored by State Senator Guy Rushenthaler, who is out of the Pittsburgh area, right, kind of the outlying suburbs, I think Mount Lebanon, that area. Mm-hmm. And he had a bill put in place to require municipalities to follow the procedures of anytime there's a federal immigration detainer that is put in place. Because as it is now, some of these sanctuary cities will refuse to honor these detainers by Immigrations and Customs.
So that's the beef. In other words, the federal law is okay. It's the cities that are violating the rule.
It's the state's application of it and not honoring that.
So you're an attorney. What do you call that when they do that?
Well, it's the way that the law goes is if someone is taken into custody, and actually when we were this came about and we're in committee because it came out of Judiciary, and of which I sit on as well, and then it went up and went up to the Senate floor and passed. But there was the issue of these towns being termed by this study as sanctuary cities. And as we're looking at that, and I'm looking at my district, I see that Bedford was listed as possibly being this, not a sanctuary city, but not honoring these things. So mm-hmm. I quickly picked up the phone and gave a call to the district attorney, Bill Higgins, right, and I knew he would not be in favor of this classification.
I can't see Bill be doing this, not today anyway.
And he was very quick to act to resolve it and to take Bedford off of that, whatever that list was. But what it is if someone is detained, say they're driving, weaving drunk or doing some type of violation of the vehicle code, they get stopped and they get arrested for what have you. It's learned that they have a detainer. A federal detainer, meaning that maybe they're an illegal immigrant, they're not here legally, the judge would set bond on the state charge. So the DUI, you know, maybe they get a bond of ROR or $1,000 bond or $10,000 bond. They post the bond, they could be free to be released. But if there's a federal detainer, they would be required and be asked to hold that individual for 48 hours. The federal, if ICE wants to come and they can take that person, they have a 48-hour hold. Well, there's cities that were not honoring that. So they're getting pulled over for a DUI or whatever, some minor criminal offense. Yeah. They make bond. Mm-hmm. It's the only thing that you don't have the right to bond is murder. Right. So if you have murder, then you can keep them in jail. But these individuals were posting bond, walking, and then the states were not complying with that. So this bill made it that if the states do not honor that 48 hours, just 48 hours to come and give them a chance, give the federal government a chance to come and pick these individuals up who are not possibly not even here legally. There's a reason they have a federal detainer on them. Then if those states or municipalities would not honor that, they could lose their funding. So that passed the Senate and went over to the House.
You think it's going to get passed?
I would hope. I mean, it's common sense.
Why would the governor be against something like that?
I can't answer that.
It makes sense
because you have individuals.
This is the best explanation I've ever heard of this issue, and I really appreciate your explaining it because the police officer is the initial point of contact for all of this. So if he's picking up someone for a traffic violation or in a light out or even drunk driving, you've got this guy. Now you've got him in the system. You can look at him, find out if he is legal or illegal. If he's illegal, I guess an American citizen like me would say, well, how come we just don't pick him up and throw him out? We don't get the rest of it. Does he have legal rights like all the citizens do?
No.
No.
And that's what was incredulous to me. I mean, there was certain pushback on the floor from some of the senators in the eastern part of the state from Philadelphia saying, well, this is just you're going to allow the police to go in and just detain these people. And they cite this. There was a federal case which dealt with that. But it was the facts were so egregious where this somebody got detained. They could have posted a bond. It was just the fact pattern would likely never happen again. But that's what was the counter argument to that is you're not going out and picking or knocking on doors, rounding people up. This is someone that is in lawful custody for a violation of our crimes code that happens to have an ancillary detainer lodged on them.
Which means another unlawful
right
thing. Yeah.
For some reason, which right. is serious. Right. So, I mean, we're not saying put them in jail for mm-hmm. a week even, just right. 48 hours and give uh-huh. ICE the chance to come down and pick up that individual.
It seems to me a regular old American criminal wouldn't get a deal like this. If you got a guy with 15 warrants against him walking around Bedford, would not get this
right.
deal.
Right. You'd put them in custody.
Our guest is Wayne Langerholtz, and this is very interesting. We're going to be back in a second, and when we do, I'm going to just go a little bit more with this, and then we'll change our subject. But this is fascinating for no other reason what I'm learning. Anyway, we'll be back with Senator Langerholtz when Bedford County Speaks continues.
Hello, I'm Mark Thomas. Perhaps while driving around Bedford County lately, you may have noticed our current outdoor billboards. Stephanie March, general manager of Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, knows better than anyone about our mission of total satisfaction. When we talk about our seven ways to save, we mean not only are we saving you money, but also saving you some time and aggravation. Our attention to complete satisfaction makes sure you're happy with our vehicles and service, which keeps us happy to have a loyal customer. Our seven ways to save is a process to ensure you have complete information to make the decision that's best for you when you purchase a car or truck. We encourage you to visit Thomas Chevrolet Subaru right here in Bedford and see for yourself why our goal is your complete satisfaction. Visit us on Business Route 220 north of Bedford or visit us 24/7 online at thomaschevrolet.com.
This is Emily Dermer, a volunteer at Old Bedford Village, and you're listening to Bedford County Speaks over News Talk 1310 WBFD.
Now, let's head back to Lloyd Roach and Bedford County Speaks.
We have returned. Bedford County Speaks is in the office today in Bedford of Senator Wayne Langerholtz, which he told me is in the new old office, so that's good. He didn't move. It, you're 100-something here, Richard, right? So that's really great to have you here in town. We're flattered that you would have a senatorial office in little old Bedford. It's really great to have you here.
Glad to be here.
When we were speaking just before the break, you were giving us an excellent explanation on the sanctuary city, and I have not heard any of this from the federal press. All we hear is that poor immigrant people who need jobs are being detained by the federal government. Doesn't matter if they climbed over the wall or no wall or got in illegally. They're still illegal. They broke a law by coming in here. Let me just ask you what happens when this doesn't work. For example, if they come into Philadelphia, which you've already established as a sanctuary city, and this happens, what you've described, and ICE is not called, what happens to the individual? Is he thrown back into the city someplace, never to be seen again?
If they're making bond, then they're on the streets.
Right. I mean, for his traffic.
And if they have a detainer right. lodged against them from the federal government, what's going to keep them from just from appearing?
So he can hang out in this country illegally as long as he can get away with it.
Right.
Right. And if he is a relatively unknown person, he could do it for decades.
Possibly.
And that's what's happened times how many millions, we don't know.
Correct.
Interesting. All right. Thank you. I just wanted you to explain that. You did an excellent job. Really appreciate it. You had some teletown halls. Did you make that name up? That's a good name.
No, I did not.
tell me about your teletown hall. You had one recently, and I guess it was last week or something, week before. How'd it go?
Very well received and very happy to do it. And you're able to really reach a large portion of the district by phone. If anyone listening heard the call or received the calls or saw on our Facebook page or Senate website, that they had the opportunity to call in and then listen. And if they wanted to, they could press *3, they could call.
Oh, so you could sit there and just listen.
They could call in and ask a question, or you could just listen.
You didn't have to talk. Okay,
correct.
Well, that's good.
Correct. And if you wanted to ask a question, you push *3, and it would remind me that, actually, when we were doing that, you have to say this every, 10 seconds so that we can get these questions in.
Right.
And I was saying, press three, and they kept holding up. And I thought, why do you keep holding this up? I keep saying that. Well, I forgot to say *3. So then there were no questions coming in. I said, *3.
And well, we're all getting used to this new technology. It's no big deal. So when you had your teletown hall, were people calling in from your entire district?
Yes.
And what was the number one question that came up?
There were a range of questions. We focused this teletown hall on the opioid epidemic.
And
District Attorney Kelly Callahan, my old boss, and District Attorney Bill Higgins, and then a treatment provider as well. There were a myriad of questions, but a lot were, how do I get to treatment, or how can I Are there any, you know, opportunities for transportation, or what, you know, what can I do? You know, I have a loved one or a relative that's dealing with this. How do we, you know, combat this? And why is it so easy for people to prescribe this? And why aren't we doing something with these people that are bringing this poison into our community? There's no one magic answer to combat this problem. I mean, there needs to be things done, you know, a multifaceted approach. And I've said that for, you know, since I've been campaigning. And since
I have an emergency room physician we spoke to here in Bedford. And he explained that it was also the change in the attitude of pain management. He said, we now take these things for every damn thing. He said, if you get a bad headache, you take these things. And so, and they're easy to get. They're easy to prescribe. And so the physicians themselves, I understand, are trying to control the prescription.
There's been steps that have been taken. And I heard a very good quote. I participated in a regular town hall meeting in Cambria County, UPJ, a couple months ago. And the district attorney of Somerset County, Lisa Lazzari-Streiser, said something I thought that rang true, is the human condition is not to live pain-free all the time.
Yeah, like
I thought
kidding.
That was pretty, you know, that's pretty telling that we've come to a point as a society that we want automatic fixes for everything.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's part of the problem. And we've taken, there's been steps that have been taken so far with the prescription drug registry where doctors must be accountable for what they register. And there's also legislation pending making any opioid prescriptions to be electronic directly from the physician to the pharmacy, taking it out of the hands of you, handing you a script, paper script that would possibly lead to abuse. So, and I'm supportive of that. And those are just some different things that we can use in the tools to combat the epidemic.
Well, good luck with licking it. I know it's a concern for everyone, and I don't think it's partisan at all. I think everybody really wants to get this out of the way. Let me turn a little bit to one of your new jobs, transportation. At least from my citizen's observation, I go around the Commonwealth. I do drive around Pennsylvania a lot just because of this and some other things I do. But I see a lot of roads being fixed, a lot of bridges being built. What happened? We have some money all of a sudden that came from somewhere. I mean, there's a bridge out in 56 they're fixing. They have one down in near Hindman, I saw, that they just finished.
So. That is a direct result of the gas tax, which was before my time. But yeah, that's where that money's coming from. That's why you pay more at the pump here, and you hear and people complain about that and don't want to pay that extra amount of gas. But that's
my view has always been that the user of the product should pay for it. I don't see any problem with that. To me, it's like paying a fee on the turnpike. I mean, come on. Yeah, if you want to drive on the turnpike, it's not a bad thing to say you have to spend a little money to do it, you know. On 56, as a matter of fact, they've got a great big PennDOT thing going on where they're inviting the public to come in and make comments. I think the comment period may be over for that. But to try to fix that god-awful trip to Johnstown, which you've made a time or two.
Yes, yes.
So are you involved directly with these kinds of things, or is it more of a broad view on the Transportation Committee?
I'm involved with the different representatives of the district. You know, it covers a couple of different parts of the district, Clearfield as well as Bedford and Cambria, and just in touch with those district directors as well as sitting on the Transportation Committee. And they have their plan, you know, 7 years out. And early on when I, after being elected, sat down with all of those representatives across the district to get a time frame as well as a project scope as to what is planned, what's going to happen over the next year, 2 years, all the way up to what's their plan, you know, 10 years out.
Right.
And they're very proactive in that and in identifying different projects.
Well, I want to tell you something, and this is a true story. I drove to Baltimore last weekend, and I went down, I think it was Route 70, but I came back just for fun on Route 30 via York. It was kind of circuitous. But for the first time in a long time, I left a road in Maryland that was bumpy and went onto a road in Pennsylvania that was smooth. And that is not how it was like for a long time.
That's good.
So you guys, something's going on that's right there. So it's good. Yeah.
And they're making a dent on it. I mean, it's no secret that there's a large percentage of bridges that are structurally deficient in the Commonwealth. And that money is allocated to that. And they're making a dent. So they're making progress with the repair as well as the road improvements of the infrastructure. So.
Well, good luck with it. I think that's super. Our guest is Wayne Langerholtz, Senator of what district is it? It has a name.
35th
district. 35th district, right. Yeah, I should know that. I'm doing this interview here, and I should know that. I see also that there was a release sent to us here at the station, I guess a couple of weeks ago, last week, about some local grants that you guys have done. And you just made a nice grant to Old Bedford Village for historic situations and societies and art museums. Is that going to continue, or is that just kind of a one-and-done thing, you think?
Hopefully it will continue.
Yeah.
That's something that's very important, and I'm a very strong supporter of the arts. That brings quality of life, which brings tourism, which brings just general overall well-being to individuals within the district.
And as you know, we just got the okay to open up the Anderson House as part of the SAMA thing here in Bedford. SAMA, the Southern Allegheny Museum of Art, has museums, I think, in four towns. And they're going to have their fifth one here in Bedford, in the Anderson House, about a half a block from here. And they're going to build that this summer and hopefully have it operational by next fall. So maybe someone will come and see about that, because that's a good one. I serve on the Pike to Bike Steering Committee here in Bedford. So I promised my pals over there I wouldn't beat you up about this, but I will ask you. We're very excited about this project, the Pike to Bike, because we want to open the two tunnels of the abandoned turnpike into what we think will be an alarmingly good attraction for people to come to see the state, and specifically Bedford County. Have you had any contact with these folks on this?
I just met with them this morning.
Good.
When we were down here for the day, met with them, and that's a very exciting project, which I am 100% behind. I think that can have a tremendous impact on the region.
Because our chairman, John Carlin, has really done a great job in getting everybody fired up about this, and as you probably know, we had the Secretary of Transportation in to walk the tunnels and the road,
yes.
I think, a few months ago. I think that what impressed me about the project was that the national interest in this thing, because it is, you have to admit, it is very weird and different, and it really makes it very exciting that you can walk down a highway that was once a four-lane highway built in the 1930s, and now they just kind of walked away from it, and now they've got these giant tunnels, and it's about the coolest thing I've ever seen. So I think that I wish it well, but I think it's going to be a great project for the state and clearly for Bedford County and Fulton County. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the state budget process. We have just a few minutes left, and I know it's always been painful the last couple of years, and I know you haven't been involved with it directly, but kind of now you are. So is that – we're seeing any light at the end of that tunnel, if you will, or is that going to look a little better this year maybe?
I'm optimistic.
Yeah.
I mean, this will be my first go-around with the budget, but I'm optimistic that we will, get this passed. You see some – give and take from both sides, and you're going to need that to ultimately to pass the budget. But I will head back to Harrisburg this coming week, which is the first week of June, and plan on being in Harrisburg probably the most of the month, just dealing with the budget. And there will be things that we will discuss and start to put the framework down.
Do you think our Pennsylvania government spends too much money?
Yes. Yes. And I've said that before. We don't have a revenue problem. We have a spending problem.
Right.
But the question is then, how do you carefully balance all the spending and then the amount of people that have been in to see me over the past, 5 months, and everyone very passionate about their cause, but there need to be cuts.
There need to be cuts. Tough to cut a budget when someone has their hand out.
Correct.
I miss anything that you wanted to cover?
Excited to be in the position, and I just encourage anyone that has any questions to contact the Bedford office or any of the offices across the district or the Capitol, and we're here to serve you.
Good. Well, Senator Langerholtz, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you.
It's always fun to talk with you, and hope to see you again soon. And thank you for your inviting me into your gracious office. I've never been in this office before, so it's kind of
fun. My pleasure.
Bedford County Speaks was presented this morning by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, right on Route 220 in Bedford, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years. I look forward to joining you next time right here on News Talk 1310 WBFD. Until then, enjoy your weekend. This is Lloyd Roach.
Thanks for listening to Bedford County Speaks. This program is heard every Saturday at this time over News Talk 1310 WBFD.
If you would like to hear this program again, visit BedfordCountySpeaks.com and click Listen Here. Bedford County Speaks is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of News Talk 1310. If you or your organization would like to appear on the show, visit our website, BedfordCountySpeaks.com, for contact information. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.